go ahead and open this regular meeting of the Board of Directors for the Upper San Gabriel Valley Municipal Water District. If I could have Mr. Arighi lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance.
Our flag is flying in color, brilliant in courage, and firm in faith. To these, let us add our sincere pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Mr. Chapman, can you take roll call?
All present, with the exception of Director Robinson and Director Chavez.
Do I have a motion to adopt the agenda?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Seeing no objections, so moved. Go ahead and open public comment. Anyone wishing to discuss an item should do so now. Then go ahead and limit the remarks to 3 minutes. Seeing no interest, I'm going to go ahead and close public comment. On to the minutes. Do I have a motion to approve the minutes?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Seeing no objections, so moved. Demands on the general fund account?
Yeah, Mr. President, we have demands on the general fund of $76,960.
Motion to approve?
Second.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Seeing no objections, so moved. Vote and move to action discussion item number A, update regarding the Bay Delta Conservation Program.
Yeah, President Marias, fellow board members, we have before us today this item, which is an in-depth discussion and a presentation by Mr. Steve Arakawa from Metropolitan Water District on the Bay Delta. As you're aware, we're moving through the process of preparing an integrated resources plan, and staff felt it would be beneficial this month to focus on the Bay Delta, which is a critical initiative that Metropolitan Water District is doing an amazing job of moving forward, and next month to have a similar focus conversation about Colorado River matters, so that the board is well-informed going into the selection of a preferred resource mix for the Integrated Resources Plan in the spring. We have the benefit of Mr. Arakawa being with us today. Steve has forgotten more about the Bay Delta than the next top 10 experts know. So with that, I'll turn it over to Steve, and he has about a half hour or so presentation for us this morning.
So I figure I'll speak from here if that works okay for everybody. Good morning. Good morning, Mr. President and members of the board. Thank you for the introduction, Shane. And what I wanted to do today is to go over some context as to the importance of the Delta to our state water project supply for a metropolitan service area. In doing so, talk about what are we facing in terms of risks in the Delta and how our supply has been affected up until now, and talk about what are the ongoing activities and proposed solutions to try to deal with those challenges that we have to the state project supply in the Delta. From an overall context point of view, the importance of dealing with the Delta has to do with restoring the reliability we've lost in the last few years due to the Endangered Species Act, and to try to maintain that reliability. If you look out into the future and you take into account population increase and the need for more water, that supply is for the Met service area based on its water supply strategy. It's going to come from conservation and new local resources. But in terms of making the whole water supply strategy work, it really requires locking in and trying to depend upon a supply from the state project, and to not lose that supply over time, which is what we have been facing. The fact that with each new listing of a particular species in the Delta, with each new regulation, that has an erosion on our supply. So what we're looking to do is to restore the supply that we've lost since 2007, and to try to count on that supply because of improvements in the system, and then all of our new supply for the region would be coming from new conservation activity and new local resources. So I provide that as the overall context as to why we would be involved in the Delta. Just to give you an idea for what we're facing in this particular water year, because in California, hydrology goes from one extreme to the next, it seems like. But if you remember, last year was a pretty good wet year, And this year in Northern California, we're tracking a very dry year. And in fact, for a while there, it looked as dry as in 1977. For those that that were around in California at that time, that was a very severe drought year. It's a little bit above that, but not very much. Fortunately, we have the benefit of some replenished storage supplies in our statewide system. Moving from Lake Oroville in the north, which is one of our primary state water project reservoirs, San Luis Reservoir as well, which is along the state water project aqueduct system, and then Diamond Valley Lake, which is Metropolitan supply, surface storage supply in its service area out in Riverside. Lake Mead is our Colorado River supply, and it's improving, but still this year, compared to last year, a very low snowpack year. Last year was a pretty decent snowpack year after suffering through many years of drought on the Colorado. This year, for that system, 72% is a pretty dry year. So, like I said, we go from one extreme to the next, but because of our storage in our system this year, we don't have any pending significant drought-type actions for this year, but you know, if this were to continue, that would be a different story. So in talking about the delta, the delta is in the middle of the full state water project system, and if you were to follow from Lake Oroville up in the north and down the Feather River and down near just east of the city of San Francisco, there's a whole area called the Delta, where the Sacramento River and the San Joaquin River join. Those two rivers join and flow into the San Francisco Bay. That is where water that comes from the state water project system from Oroville releases and from other watershed sources. That water is diverted in the south end of that delta and put in the California Aqueduct. For those that have driven along I-5, you've seen the aqueduct system that extends through the length of the San Joaquin Valley down to Southern California. And this truly is the hub of the whole state's water system, because not only does the state water project rely on the delta, but the federal Central Valley Project, a similar type of project that serves much of California's agricultural economy, it also diverts water from the Delta area. So it's pretty important. If you follow San Francisco Bay and you go upstream, that's where you'll find the Delta area. The interest and the overall economic connection to different areas in California is very significant. The Bay Area depends upon the Delta system, the State Water Project, for about a third of its water supply, just as we do in Southern California and in Metro Service Area. The Central Valley, depending upon whether it's overlying groundwater or not, depends on the supply for anywhere from 23% to 90%. So those that do not have groundwater depend on the system for a significant amount of its water supply. And so each of these areas are somehow connected up with the Delta, and each of these areas are part of the California economy. One of the things that people don't realize is who really uses the water in the Delta system. And many times when you go up north and talk to people about our interest and what we're trying to do, many people think that Metropolitan diverts about half of the water out of the Delta system, which in fact is not really the case. If you look at the whole watershed in the Delta that drains the Sacramento Valley, the San Joaquin Valley, and you account for all of that, on average about 48% of that water goes to the San Francisco Bay and out to the ocean, and in many ways helping to protect the environmental resources of the system. About 31% is used upstream, largely for Delta agriculture, but also the Bay Area with the Oakland and Berkeley area that uses East Bay Municipal Utility District water, as well as the city of San Francisco through its Hetch Hetchy system. Those two significant urban areas use water and divert it from upstream as well. As far as Delta exports, about 17% of the water in the watershed is exported. And of that 17%, Metropolitan's portion of that is 4%. So we're about equal to what is used in, excuse me, sorry about that. We're about equal to what is used in the delta itself, which is 4%. That amount, that slice here is the delta itself. Metropolitan is about equivalent to that, and we make up about 4% of the delta exports. So hopefully that gives you a little context to how the watershed works and how much water is being taken out of the system. There are key risks. Certainly the fishery declines and the regulations that are set in order to protect those fisheries. One of the key ones, Delta Smelt, has received a lot of attention in recent years, but also there are different strains of salmon that use that system as a migratory corridor to move upstream and spawn, and then young fish then move out back out to the ocean. So there are a number of fisheries that depend upon the system, and declining populations are a key focus. Second is subsidence. The area has got a lot of organic soil. Was once more of a natural estuary where there was more of a natural estuarine system. They reclaimed the area, drained it, and made it into agricultural area for agricultural productivity. And in doing so, the organic soils over time either oxidate or decompose, or they subside, get compacted over time. So in many places, the land surface of these islands in the middle of the delta can be as much as 25 feet below the water surface in the adjoining channel. So in terms of our water supply moving through that system, if any of those levees that are holding back that water were to fail, and they're made out of organic soils made developed over 100 years ago, our water supply system is vulnerable. Seismic risks, there are a number of Bay Area faults that are either in the San Francisco area or adjacent to the delta, and I'll talk a little bit about that, and then sea level rise. There's a projection, a scientific projection, that sea level rise in that area could be up to 55 inches in the next 100 years. So going into a little more detail about what's affecting our water system, when it comes to the fisheries, it really comes down to the ability to move water from the Sacramento River in the north end of this delta area to the export pumps, which are shown by these two yellow circles or dots. And in many cases of in times of the year, limiting the flow of water towards those pumps. And they call that reverse flow or southerly flow. And the regulations go directly at limiting those flows during certain critical times. Those are the impacts that are causing the water supply reductions to the State Water Project. And from the period of 2008 to 2010, a significant amount of water was left behind, not exported as a result of that. If you looked at the amount of cost that that is to replace that water, and for the purposes of this example, assuming about $300 an acre foot to get water from a agriculture to urban water transfer to replace water that was lost through this regulation, the costs are multi-millions of dollars. The actions under the Endangered Species Act are called biological opinions. Those are where the regulations are. That's what impacts our system and the diversions. And that has the effect of reducing our supply from about a fifth to a third annually, depending upon where the fish are, how close they are to the pumps, and what kind of weather or hydrology system there is. And then, so that's for smelt, and then for salmon, those regulations can add another 10%. That doesn't happen in each and every year, but in certain conditions, that could be the worst-case situation. Regarding seismic vulnerability, there are multiple faults, and the United States Geological Survey has estimated or forecasted that there's a two-thirds chance of an earthquake of sizable proportions, a plausible earthquake occurring in that area greater than 6.5. And that 6.5 earthquake could occur sometime between now and 2032. And so I mentioned earlier that these levee systems that were built 100 years ago when they were reclaiming this area for agriculture and they drained this estuarine area with organic soils, the area is vulnerable because of that, because the water surface elevation is up to 25 to 30 feet above the land surface, and if those levees fail, that water would rush into those islands and draw salt water from the ocean or from San Francisco Bay into our water system.
Question.
Yes.
On the previous slide.
Yes.
Is there any estimates about the 2011 impact? How much that cost?
Yeah, there. Fortunately for us, last year was a pretty wet year, and specifically the San Joaquin River was wet, so there was very minimal impact, if any, in the 2011 water year. This year, as it's trending dry, we're probably not going to be as lucky as that. Thanks for the question.
2012 may look like 2010.
Yes, it's trending dry. You're welcome. So in terms of overall, how are different interest groups approaching this this very challenging situation? Back in 2009, there was legislation passed in the state legislature, pretty remarkable legislation in that it got bipartisan support on a water issue, which doesn't happen very often. And they passed a set of bills through the legislature that dealt with the Delta. It included a proposed water bond as well as some water policy bills that included dealing with the Delta, and it's called the Delta Reform Act. And for those that are following, as you know, the water bond that was originally scheduled for 2010, then rescheduled for 2012, is still a big question mark, and I'll get into that a little bit in a slide up a little later. But that was all part of a significant legislative package. Secondly, there has been, to deal with the regulations, an effort to develop a habitat conservation plan. And in this situation, we're calling it Bay Delta Conservation Plan. And it's a way to get permits to operate a project, to operate a land development, to operate a water project under the Endangered Species Act. And so that's really the bottom line of what the Bay Delta Conservation Plan is to propose a habitat conservation plan to allow for the agencies that regulate to provide those permits to operate that project. And that's what we're looking to do. At the same time, we're looking to take some actions in the near term to improve our supply conditions. And we're also doing a lot of work to understand the underlying science so that whatever we do in restoring the Delta, we have a good idea of what's causing the problem. In terms of the legislation, was there a question?
Yeah, just a question. Are we still able to get water whenever there's water available off the Central Valley project, off the federal projects, and divert that water into the into our distribution system?
There's an ability to use what's called the second point of diversion. Sometimes the systems use a water accounting so that you can use each other's export capacity. But in the end, the Central Valley project has a certain supply that it has a right to, as well as the State Water Project, and they keep a clear accounting of that. But in terms of using physical capacity to pump, there is some trading of capacity to help improve the efficiency of the system.
There was some federal legislation, H.R. 1313, that created the ability for Metropolitan to draw water off the Central Valley Project or the federal project in times of excess water on the federal side. Is that... Basically, we're not doing it anymore.
Well, there, like I said, there is an opportunity to do a couple things. One is to use the federal pumps, or for the federal side to use the state pumps, which is more likely because the state pumps have more capacity than the federal pumps. So, more times than not, they're looking to use state water project pumping capacity, but it does have the ability to use the federal pumps for purposes of the state project. The other thing that has been allowed in the past is being able to manage water within our service areas between a federal project and a state project. And we have, as you know, the Arvin Edison project, which
right.
is a way of doing some exchanges with another federal project.
And that's my point exactly, that are we still... Are we pursuing that?
We are. Yeah, we have been using that program. During the dry times, we drew a lot of water out, and in the wetter times, we plan on putting water back in.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So in terms of the legislation, two key things came out of it. One is the ability to pursue this Bay Delta Conservation Plan, and the other is in the area of governance. Who gets to make all of the decisions? They formulated what's called a Delta Stewardship Council, and it's a 7-member council that oversees activities in the Delta, and I'm going to go into that a little more, but these are the two key areas that came out of the federal legislation as it relates to the Delta. On the Delta Stewardship Council, this council is charged with organizing and providing more of a concerted effort to steer different activities in the Delta in a direction that makes the most sense so that there's not duplication. In fact, there's like 200 or more agencies that have some kind of authority in the Delta, and when the legislature took its action, it was intending to try to streamline that to some degree to make sure that these actions were coordinated and that they weren't working at cross purposes. The council members that were appointed following the legislation include those that are shown on the slide, with the chair being Phil Eisenberg, who is an ex-legislator and a real veteran in the water issues. For Southern California, Gloria Gray was appointed, Randy Fiorini from the Central Valley, Patrick Johnson from the Delta area, Felicia Marcus, an environmental interest representative, Hank Nordoff from San Diego, and Don Natoli, who was a county supervisor in the county of Sacramento. So those were the parties that were appointed and still are a part of the council, and they're in the middle of developing what they call a Delta plan. So the Delta plan, talking about a Bay Delta conservation plan, now I'm shifting to Delta plan, but a Delta plan as scoped out in the legislation is much broader than just water. It deals with all kinds of land use development in the Delta, transportation, flood control, much more overreaching activity, trying to get all of these different regulations lined up so that they work properly. So think of it as more of an umbrella versus the Bay Delta Conservation Plan, which I was mentioning earlier, which is more targeted towards fisheries and water supply system. So this Delta plan is being developed. It's in its fifth draft, and they're looking to finalize that in the upcoming months. But it deals with these types of issues. And for us, what is of interest to us is the Bay Delta Conservation Plan, if it meets certain state criteria, would be adopted into the Delta plan. So it would become a piece of this Delta plan. And that's what our real charge is to make sure that that happens. But like I said, it deals with a lot of other things. It deals with flood control. It deals with land use in the Delta and transportation and all types of things that affect that local system, that local area. I mentioned, so they're in the fifth draft. It includes 12 proposed policies and 61 recommendations. A number of parties up and down the state have commented on this draft plan. And like I said, the council is looking to finalize that in the coming months. But they're right in the middle of receiving their comments on the fifth draft and looking to determine how do they respond to those comments in their environmental impact report. So they're right in the middle of a key decision part of their process. We've had some comments which we feel are very important for the council to take into account. One is that when looking at Delta diversions, they look to how the Delta continues to be a supply source that we utilize in the export area, rather than looking at it as a declining source of supply. There is reason to believe that the fifth draft may be looking at how reduced diversions in the Delta will have to occur over time versus our position, which is a reduced dependency in the future. So as time goes on in the future, a smaller portion or percentage of our supply would be we would be dependent on the Delta for a smaller portion of our supply. But in this proposed draft, one concern that we have is it looks like it's looking to reduce the amount of water that we take from the Delta compared to where we are today. That's one of the key issues. The other is making sure that they have an approval process for the Bay Delta Conservation Plan that meets the intent of the legislation. When considering actions in the Delta that we are pursuing, There is a proposed process to look to areas like Metropolitan Service Area and its retailers and to make decisions about how we manage our water. And our comment has been that there are already processes set up to deal with that in terms of how we do recycling, how we do water conservation, how we set our rates. And so rather than focusing on those types of local actions, they should be dealing more with the Delta-related actions. So that's been our comment there. And then on levies, making sure that they have a priority to which levies ought to get restored and how does it affect the overall state's interests and economy. I mentioned that they're in the middle of getting those comments. They're looking to release another draft in like the March period, a sixth draft and a seventh draft in April, May period, and then consider adoption of this Delta plan sometime in the next 2 to 3 months. So let me shift now from the Delta plan to the Bay Delta Conservation Plan. So if we're successful, this would become part of the Delta plan, and it's intended to restore the supply reliability of the state water project system in the Delta, dealing with it in a way that deals with multiple species so that the plan deals with all of these listed species. Yes?
Yes, Steve, I just want to make a comment, if I may, Mr. Chair. You know, we here in Southern California have voted on countless bond measures that deal with levee restoration for the Delta, countless. And the vote has been carried because of Southern California and the number of people we have down here. Yet, and I spoke out against the last bond measure, because none of those bond measures have resulted in 1 acre foot of water coming south. They all have been for levee restoration. And if you notice, they're also calling on the BDCP plan for levee restoration again. How many millions or billions of dollars is Southern California going to invest in this restoration without us getting any water south? And that's the question we have to ask ourselves here in Southern California. And that's it.
Yeah, I think that issue really does become important when you consider the water bond, the idea of the water bond that was originally passed by the legislature in 2009, and I'll address that. The Bay Delta Conservation Plan is intended to improve our supply, to increase our amount of water compared to where we are today, to restore what we've lost. And to do that, it includes building some water delivery systems in the Delta, a new diversion in the north end of the Delta that's more friendly to fish, and secondly, to provide habitat conservation or improvements to the fish habitat and some of the other things that are affecting fish, to invest in those types of actions. And the idea of the water bond is that the water bond would not actually fund the new conveyance system to get the water. That would be funded by the water contractors, the water users. But the idea here is that the Delta has been affected by so many different actions in the past, more than just the water system, and that the state has an interest in improving that so that more of a general funded or a general source of revenue should be identified to provide for those improvements. And that is really what the water bond would deal with, is to provide that kind of restoration in the Delta, or correcting things that maybe were caused 100 years ago or more.
See, and one of the things that we need to look at is, as we're going to consider the water bond in 2014, I think the governor's going to put it off. And one of the things that I would say, Steve, is that I've been around the Delta for such a long time and see many things. If we can do an environmental fast track for a stadium in Southern California, why can't we do an environmental fast track for a Delta conveyance? I mean, we have the political muscle down here because we have the population in Southern California. And the point I'm trying to make is what Steve just said right now. The water bond does not do anything for bringing water south.
again, it deals with restoration. It deals, yeah, we'll get maybe some money for recycling down here. But still, we still have the hurdle of the Delta conveyance, which is not addressed really in the water bonds. The water bond addresses recycling and conservation. So I think that in order for Southern California to support the water bond, there has to be something added to that legislation or to that bond measure that would ensure that Southern California's conveyance system would be put on a fast track environmentally, similar to the stadiums that are being built or trying to be built in Southern California. I think it's just as important as a stadium is to ensure that we have water for Southern California. Probably much more important than a stadium, than a football stadium. So that's the thing I would say to the audience out here and to this board, that we should be thinking about doing that.
I think that's a good comment. I think the problem is, I think the legislatures in Southern California have to be stronger.
Absolutely.
To demand this. Absolutely. I think another thing, too, is this is going to take a tremendous information campaign. The public, the general public, has absolutely no idea what's going on and why it's, and probably it's why it would fail. It was on the 2012 ballot with the financial crisis. And a negative comment for Met is they seem to have been pulled away from any kind of information campaign. And it's going to have to be a visual campaign. 2 years ago, Jim Tebow released in the United States Congress the plans and the preview for a theatrical presentation, a visual presentation with Congress people Garamendi and Costa and Napolitano. And it's a very wonderful, informative theatrical presentation. And Pat Melroy from Las Vegas came in with 100,000. Met just sat on his hands, and they refused to do this. And it's going to go nowhere if the public doesn't understand it. They don't.
Yeah, I think those are very good points. I think on the environmental review, I think that's certainly something that will need to be looked at because you could get bogged in down many, many years and challenges and things like that. So just as the stadium was looking for a way to get some more certainty to its decision making, I think there's a real merit in looking at that. And then in terms of our communication strategy, I think that a strong outreach program is going to be very important. Southern California Water Committee, which is made up of water agencies, business, local elected officials, they're beginning to ramp up their efforts, but I think there's going to need to be more than that. I think that's a very good point. And so as this Bay Delta Conservation Plan is released later on this year, in draft form for public review, it's going to be very important to have a strong outreach program, not only with the public, but also with elected officials, both in Washington and Sacramento, so that they're aware of what this is about, what the interests are, why this makes sense. Those are good points.
Steve,
yes?
Has any progress been made on the secondary sewage effluent that's going into the Delta? Argument can be made that the locals are destroying the ecosystem on their own, not the diversions. I'm less concerned about levee repairs than I am about the secondary sewage effluent and the agriculture on the Delta Island.
Yeah, so Director Robinson, what he's referring to is that the county of Sacramento has a sewage discharge into the Sacramento River. And I mentioned earlier our efforts to improve our science, to understand what's really happening out there. That has led us to challenge the permitting of that treatment plant because we feel that it's having a harmful effect on the fisheries, it's having a harmful effect on the food web. And so far, that process is grinding through the courts. They are appealing that in court right now, but we are looking to assure that they upgrade their treatment facilities to take out ammonia, take out nitrogen, so that it doesn't have that kind of effect on the food chain. Certainly, we need to carry forward with that. Yes?
In addition to the Sacramento treatment plant that, as you mentioned, is in the courts, aren't they also pursuing against Contra Costa and Vallejo's treatment plants, which are still in the tentative permitting stage?
Yes, very good. Yes, they're in the tentative permitting stage, and with those parties, they seem to be open to talking with us and working out a schedule for what kind of actions, what kind of studies to understand the impacts. And so us working with the regional boards that oversee that and with the parties that are actually discharging, that has become more of a fruitful situation than what we had faced with the Sacramento parties.
Okay, can we continue with that?
Yes.
This presentation, please.
So with this Bay Delta Conservation Plan, it's looking to restore habitat in the Delta. This was once really a natural system, and then they drained it and it became agricultural. But looking not necessarily to wind the clock back 150 years, but to create some areas that would provide additional habitat for these fish, more food supply, and to create tidal marsh in the area that are going to be important to these fisheries that are currently in decline. Secondly, to look at how to get water to the California Aqueduct in a more effective way with less impact to fisheries. And in that, looking at different options. Some options are canal, surface canal around the Delta, both an eastern alignment and a western alignment. Also, an alternative where there would be a tunnel through the middle of the Delta that would go underground. So those alignments and those options are being considered as part of this Bay Delta Conservation Plan. All of that to provide for increased flexibility to manage around the fishery needs. Other actions would be to deal with what we were just talking about. How do we deal with water quality in the system? Fish species that have been introduced that probably are predators of these fish that are being protected under the Endangered Species Act, to deal with those types of things. And a number of other actions that we think are necessary to improve the overall system. A number of parties are involved, but the key thing is the water contractors and the state of California are putting forward this Bay Delta Conservation Plan. So they are the ones that are driving this. The Department of Water Resources with the state, the water contractors, both state and federal, and then the Bureau of Reclamation on the federal side. Those are the key parties. All of the other parties are involved parties, but the ones that are putting forth this proposal are the water contractors that use the state project water and the federal project water, and then the Bureau of Reclamation on the federal side and the Department of Water Resources on the state side. They're looking at different alternatives, including different sizes of canal or tunnel. And they're looking at one option, which would be through the Delta rather than a new canal or tunnel. They're looking at no action, as you would in any kind of environmental document. So they've covered a wide range of alternatives, and they are pretty close to completing all of their analysis that would go into a draft, public draft environmental impact report in June of this year.
What are the pros and cons of those three main ones?
Okay, yeah. So canal, surface canal, it would be pretty wide, take up a lot of space in the Delta, a pretty large impact to the surface of the Delta, probably take more land out of agricultural production. So canal has that negative. On the positive side, it's probably more cost-effective, lower cost than a tunnel would be. So a tunnel underground would have less environmental impact on the surface, but it would be more expensive because of all that's, that it takes to tunnel under and to create a kind of a whole system that would allow for water to flow underneath the Delta. Then it comes down to sizing. So the larger the conveyance size, the more flexibility you have to operate. On the flip side of that, parties are concerned that the project would not operate and live up to the regulations or the rules, and they would just continue to operate for more and more water. And so there's concerns that the project would take out too much water from the Delta. So those are the pros and cons in simple terms. The through Delta, I think a pro would be the water continues to move right through those Delta channels, and parties that live in the Delta would favor that. Con would be, though, it doesn't fix any of the flow problems in the Delta, and the fish would still be susceptible to the kind of impacts that they are now. But they are looking at different sizes, and all of that analysis will be in the impact report. In terms of cost, the range for the conveyance cost is $8 to $12.7 billion. The 12.7 is really what it would cost to build a tunnel. The $8 billion would be the lower end of the cost to build a canal, and that would be paid for by the water contractors. On the habitat restoration and dealing with these other stressors that affect fish, that would be a greater proportion would be public funded. $3.6 billion total cost estimate at this time, probably federal funding, state funding. And then there may be some need to negotiate a portion of that to be water exporter, but that has not happened yet. The water bond that was proposed had $1.5 billion of funding in it to deal with these types of things, so it would be a pretty significant down payment. But that water bond is still being discussed in the legislature as to its merits and its timing.
Water bond only deals with echo restoration and stressors, not with conveyance.
That's correct.
Okay.
Yes. So in terms of understanding how does this affect cost, significant $12.7 billion at the higher end of the cost range. Today, our state project cost with the aqueduct systems, the reservoirs and all, pumping plants, it's about $236 per acre foot if you look at the last 5 years. And the amount of water that we've gotten in the last 5 years, so that's an estimate of what it's costing us for those facilities that were built. Then you look at, okay, well, you have to pump the water, so that's an energy cost, and you have to treat the water, that's a water quality treatment cost. But just for the state project system, the reservoirs and the aqueduct, that's $236 an acre foot. When looking at a conveyance system, that's about $13 billion or the higher end of that range. That would add $150 per acre foot to the capital cost. So instead of $236, it would be $236 plus $150. So that's to give you a rough idea. The whole intent, though, is to restore our supply, but also to assure that the supply that we have, we don't lose over time, and that's a real vulnerability that we have today. If you were to look at, on average, in our service area, if you look at a broad region and half of our water comes from imported and half comes from local, and you look at how that affects cost, that translates to about $40 per year per household. So if you look at that cost for conveyance and you make some assumptions about how much water you're getting from Metropolitan, from the State Water Project, that estimates out to about $40 per household per year. You know, in any kind of integrated resources planning process, you look at all of your options, and in fact, all of these options are going to be necessary in the future because, like I said earlier, our new water to provide supplies to our new population or growing population, that will have to come from local supplies and conservation. But it's important to note that the cost effectiveness of securing and trying to protect our existing state project supply, there's still a real business case for doing that. If you take the numbers that I showed you, you add them up, including treatment, including energy, it's a little over $800 an acre foot. And so it's certainly within the range of what makes sense for an integrated resources plan. And also the quality of that water is important to help support the local supply, and I'll go into that a little further. When this is a slide that we used when Metropolitan went through its integrated resources plan process a couple years ago, and if you look at these ranges and you look at, on average, what that might mean in terms of cost, it's about $1,400 an acre foot. Anybody can come up with different figures. This was our best effort at the time of trying to characterize the cost of alternative local resources. But I think the important thing is that improving the state project system provides for a diverse portfolio. It helps our local supply because the quality of that water is important for recycling. Colorado River water alone is too high in salt. And so doing cost-effective recycling would become infeasible. Also, recharging our groundwater basins with a higher quality water is very important. The key thing, though, in terms of supplies, allows for wet year banking or storage of water, and that's key because when we get to dry years, that allows us to remain reliable. And then the magnitude of replacing all of that state project supply, if it's vulnerable, there's probably not enough there's not enough desalination plants along the coast to make up that water, and there's probably not enough recycling projects that are feasible. So it really does make sense to have a diverse portfolio and trying to protect the kind of the backbone of the state project system. So it does restore water that we've lost. It enables implementing our integrated resources plan. It helps support storage and supports local resources. The key thing is continuing to work with the state of California. The Brown administration is put this not as high as some of his tax initiatives and all, but it's still very high on the priority list. The water contractors have a role as applicants, so that puts us in a strong position to assure its success. Clearly, the funding of it needs to be put together. We've talked about some of that today in terms of where the money comes from, so that's key. And then the water bond is a big question mark. If the water bond did not get scheduled for 2012, that would not be a big fatal flaw for the Bay Delta Conservation Plan, because there would still be enough activity in the next few years that would go on regardless. So it wouldn't be a stake into the part of the Bay Delta Conservation Plan, and the legislature will have to deal with what's the right size of the bond and what's the right timing. I mentioned earlier the plan is to have a public draft out in June, have a final environmental impact report on this in December, and then a final decision on this plan in February of 2013. This is a schedule that the state government and the federal government has signed an agreement that they're going to live up to this. The governor is planning to have a July event with Secretary Salazar from the Department of Interior to be very public about moving forward with this in July. And we're doing everything we can to keep this on schedule.
Question, how big of a factor is in the current drafts of the conservation plan, how big a factor is governance? The reason I mention that is because I'm not terribly impressed with the state of California's operation of the state water project. And can that plan provide incentive for the state of California to yield control of the state water project to a JPA or a public-private partnership that might operate more efficiently? Is that likely to come out of the Bay Delta Conservation Plan or not likely?
Thank you, Director Robinson. I think there are two things that will come up. One is that, and that is, what's the most effective way of operating the state project on a day-to-day basis. Those discussions are kind of low-key right now because we haven't really gotten to a point where that becomes the most serious discussion. But it has been there, and it is actually met board policy to look at those kind of alternatives. That was established a few years ago. Secondly, though, as applicants to the Bay Delta Conservation Plan, in terms of implementing this, we would be an implementing party. We would be directly involved in managing the implementation of this Bay Delta Conservation Plan. So I think the answer to your question comes in two parts. Yes, we would still maintain the opportunity to talk about operations of the state project in the future, but two, we're going to be insisting that we're involved in implementing this BDCP as it moves forward to construction and operation.
Well, inefficient operation, as it is now, the state water project is contrary to conservation.
Yeah, and I think the Metropolitan Board recognized that the governance of the state projects is very important, and that's why it took that position. I mentioned the planning process, but somewhere out in time, there would be a completion of this project. Somewhere around 2023 is the existing schedule. There may be some changes to that schedule, but right now there is no changes that I anticipate to the completion of the planning documents. That is still scheduled for completion by February of 2013. And I'll just close with a few comments in the context of, you know, this is all to try to restore our capability in the longer term, but we know that we got to deal with things in the nearer term too. And one of the things that we want to make sure of is if there is an earthquake in the coming years, we're able to deal with that. And the Metropolitan Board provided staff with direction to pursue a plan for how the state would spring into action and restore supply if there were a major earthquake, and we're continuing to pursue that plan. The state is expected to come out with a overall plan for emergency preparedness by sometime the end of this year, and we've been directly involved with them in scoping out and defining what this project would be. And it really comes down to creating a pathway through the Delta, creating a pathway by plugging up some channels and creating some a major pathway through the middle of the Delta that could be developed very soon after an earthquake event using pre-placed materials. They're already located out there, and then agreements with other agencies as to who would do what once an event occurred. And it would, like I mentioned, some of the material has already been placed, and we're looking to actually add to that, both with rock and sheet pile, as a way to have the kind of material that would be necessary to spring into action. Those are actual pictures. That one there is just a facility that would be needed in order to move and manage material. So overall, in order to move forward with success, we would need to have assurances that this plan provides the kind of supply that we're investing in, that the decisions are made based on sound science. As was mentioned earlier, an effective governance structure is very key. Local benefits for us, making sure that the cost justifies, the benefits justify the cost, and it would require broad support. So broad support meaning local support, local elected support, regional support, state legislative support, and even support from our Congress members in Washington. So that I think is going to be very important. And as Director Fellow, you mentioned earlier, the way to get to that is going to be very important. How do we educate people effectively enough to garner that broadened support? And that concludes my prepared presentation. Be happy to answer any further questions.
Do we have any questions from the public that would like to ask? Okay. Directors, any additional questions?
Well, apparently it's Met policy to store 400,000 acres of meat in I think that's to the detriment of the Southern California groundwater basin. The main San Gabriel Basin could take 80,000 acre feet of that 400,000 that's left in Lake Mead right now, and that would, in case there is a Delta emergency, an earthquake or something, that would. I think that's just good policy to be storing more water in Southern California and less water in Lake Mead. That's my major concern.
Yeah.
You don't do anything about it, I guess that's up to
And those discussions are ongoing about what to do with local storage and local replenishment water, and certainly all of the different aspects of where to store water have to be taken into account. In reality, storage needs to be placed in different spots. In the Central Valley, Lake Mead, in Southern California, and the
Tribune, I believe you have a question.
Yeah, real quick, Steve, I know you've got to go. Your presentation did not, the slides that you presented are not all included in this package.
So oh, I wonder, okay.
I wonder if you'd be kind enough to provide us with your
yeah, I apologize for that.
To this board.
Yes, absolutely.
I just want to say, I think this beats having a bullet train go to San Francisco, which will leave you then. I just don't understand the state. And the state.
Yeah, really.
Okay. Just a quick closing comment, if I may.
President Steve, thank you very much. We appreciate your time this morning. Appreciate your expertise and the good work on this. This is a very challenging effort to move forward, and Metropolitan, in my view, is doing an excellent job of working with the other agencies, federal, state, and local, to move what is a very arduous stakeholder process forward. I've explained the Bay Deltas to some of my friends that aren't in the water sector as having to remodel a house. And we've done the work on the house. We have a very nice house, which is the Metropolitan Water District, with 25 other family members, other member agencies, and we've put a new roof on it, we've put new wiring in it, we've put new plumbing into it, and remodeled the inside. So we're very fortunate to live in that house. It keeps us warm and dry. The Delta is the foundation of that house, unfortunately, and that foundation is at risk, and now we have to fix that foundation. And so, as Steve mentioned, from a water quality perspective, not just availability of supply, we can't leave out the specter of water quality, because, as Steve mentioned, it's very important to replenish Southern California groundwater basins with a high-quality supply. And as this board is looking at becoming even more aggressive with its investments in recycled water, without that balance of a high-quality imported supply and the recycled water is off the table. So we have to keep that in mind as we move forward. That's all. Thank you.
Well, you want to go first?
This one, the problem is the mother house isn't listening to all these little casitas out there, you know? It's a problem.
And on that listening point, I mean, what would it be the Water Stewardship Committee? I mean, who needs to hear from us about the problem of storing 400,000 acre feet in Lake Mead instead of storing 80 or 100,000 more in Main San Gabriel Basin?
The Water Planning and Stewardship Committee is going to be having that conversation in the context of Metropolitan's replenishment program as we move forward.
Okay, we'll go ahead and move on with our agenda.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you.
Excellent. Anyone wishing to vote anything from the consent calendar?
Motion to approve.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Seeing no objections, so moved. Information items are available in our packets. Mr. O'Neill, attorney's report.
No report, Mr. President.
Okay. Mr. Johnson?
Thank you, Mr. President. Just a real short report. The key well as of February 3rd, 2012 was at 232.5 feet. We haven't got a more recent measurement. We should have had one last week, but I don't have one. But on the 3rd, it was 232.5, still dropping about 5 to 6 tenths a week. So until we get some rain, we're going to get some water in the spreading rounds. We're going to see it continue to drop. However, we still sit about 43 feet higher than the historic low, which was at 189, so we're still in pretty good shape there. No releases out of the Canyon Morris Reservoir or USG3, and as the general manager pointed out, discussions going on about replenishment rate. Canyons are at minimum pool, about less than 20,000 acre feet. We're still seeing about 40 CFS inflow into San Gabriel Canyon, even though we're not having a lot of rain. We're still seeing some inflow, which is kind of unusual this time of year. Rainfall is down to below 60% of normal now. Last year we were at 133% normal. Downtown LA rainfall is only at through February 15th at 5.22 inches. And last year this time we were at 12.5 inches. So that's all.
Any questions? Okay, move on to general manager's report.
Yeah, no written report at this meeting. Just one point of good news. You'll recall that in September your board took an action to appropriate $125,000 as a contribution towards being the sponsoring agency for the Water Reuse Research Foundation's effort to do some research on optimizing indirect potable reuse technology. We're very fortunate to report at this point that the Upper District, along with the technical team that submitted that application, was selected through a national competition. That is a $500,000 study effort, which means the Water Reuse Research Foundation is going to put forward $375,000 towards that effort that the Upper District will benefit directly from. So significant savings to the ratepayers in the Valley, and Ramon and I are very excited about that news, as are the rest of the staff. I want to take the opportunity to personally thank Mr. Raimundo Trejo, as largely through his experience and professional relationships that we were able to benefit from this opportunity. So we'll be bringing a further report forward to the board in March of the Water Policy Committee.
That's fantastic news. One step closer to one of our large goals. So great news. Yep. Director's comments. Director Robinson.
Well, Steve, during his talk, mentioned in the next 100 years, perhaps sea level rise might account for 55 inches. However, as a counterpoint to that rise, if you look at the last 100-150 years, about the time California became a state, the Bay Delta was all at sea level. There's areas of the Delta that are 10 to 20 feet below the levee, below the canals. That's all happened. That's all occurred because of farming and the oxidation of soil. So he proposes that sea level may rise in the next 100 years. I'd point out that a much bigger factor has been the last century agriculture. And every time you plant a crop, the soil is dropping a whole lot faster than the sea level might rise. So METS hasn't been active enough in realistically assessing all the problems in the Delta. The Delta, I hate to sit up here and be negative, but it seems like an impossible situation with new regulations and new species may be listed. Met seems to be hanging on to that because of diversity of proposal or diversity of portfolio. I mean, there comes a point where you just have to recognize the reality of an impossible situation and write the whole thing off.
Director Pellet?
Nothing, thank you.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. A couple of things. We had a very successful Colorado River Aqueduct Tour inspection tour this weekend, and I think it was a great success. As usual, Bernie Stillions did an outstanding job, and I think we all learned something, right, Barbara? And it was great. The other thing I want to say, Mr. Chair, is this, that I think the President needs to set the ground rules on who is recognized. We can't just have, we need to have board decorum. Having directors just blurt out without you, the chair, acknowledging them, I think is in very poor taste. So I think we need to have that respect for the chair and be acknowledged by the chair. And if necessary, Shane, I know I've talked about this, maybe have a workshop on board decorum. And just act a little bit more professionally up here, not have just people just blurting out stuff at the last minute. Okay, that's it, Mr. Chair.
It's on order. Okay, I have no comments. Anyone wishing to add future agenda items? See no interest. Closed session.